Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive, very festive for the 4th of July around here. At some point, I'm going to change my screenshot to be red, white, and blue. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have put up the Gold Rush Sevens Doubler, and I sort of feel like we were taking time off on the Crab Cake Tour because I've been doing like two a week every week for like a month. We're just kind of hanging for the fourth. We'll be back after it next Friday. It's already next Friday. It's already the All-Star break. We will be down doing the Yankees game. We'll be at Fadley's in the new Lexington Market. We got some great guests. Luke's going to come down. I'm sure we're going to talk about retired Yankees numbers. Luke, I'm going to make a bet right now that there's not one moment somebody's not in Fadley's wearing something Yankees that day, because that's just the way it rolls when it's first place and second place. And we're not sure who will be what, but we're sure there'll be something like that next week. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions making the water clear. Crystal clear, delicious for summertime. If you have well water, watching all this rain fall, make sure your water's clean. Liberty Pure Solutions does that, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare, putting us out on the road. Luke, I had a tragedy in my life over the weekend. Late at night, I went to put away my coal roofing mug, and it exploded all over the floor. So I do not have my Royal Farms coffee in my coal roofing mug. I do have it in my old Dundalk throwback here. So there's some good stuff in here, like, you know, Dundalk, Maryland, and the Roll Arena where I met my son's mother and two guys, and East Point Mall and all that stuff. But I do miss my coal roofing mug, so I got to give a shout out to Bill Cole for that. How are you? Happy 4th. It's going to be a good week here. Anybody listening is going to hear a whole bunch of stuff I did last week, a whole bunch of stuff that I've kind of had hiding out and waiting for this week. But the baseball team's going to go West Coast. It's been a strange 2 weeks for the franchise in a lot of ways, from arms to getting their ass beat to picking it back up to New York. And, I mean, it was quite a June, wasn't it?
It really was. A June that had, what, one off day the entire month for the Orioles. And we talked about it a lot, the stretch of 43 games in 45 days, which even by baseball standards, that's a lot of playing baseball without a lot of breaks. So the fact that they were able to navigate that with a 26-17 record, they had a 17-12 June, and we know what kind of competition they faced in the month of June. They lost John Means and Kyle Bradish for the year over that stretch. They lost Danny Coulomb until September over that stretch. And yeah, they lost five in a row. And a week ago at this time, people were panicking. I think most people were not happy about it, but weren't panicking. But there was a little bit of panic. And lo and behold, they win four of their next five right after that. And I said that what this team has been able to do the last couple of years, they've had some stretches like this. You know, last year, right around this time, they lost 6-7, for example. And then they went on a long winning streak right after that. So it was really good to see them respond the way that they did. Sunday night notwithstanding, obviously Andrew Heaney dominated them on Sunday night, and Texas was able to salvage the final game of the series. But you take three out of four from the Rangers, who have been reeling. You did not give them any semblance of hope in terms of getting off the mat, and albeit the AL West is up for grabs, with Seattle certainly having their issues and Houston being on the come at this point. But you know, the Orioles bounce back, as they have done over and over and over the last couple of years. It's why they've been so good. So now it's a unique, you know, it's always weird when you go out to the West Coast and you know that there aren't going to be quite as many people watching, even if it is a holiday week and some people will be off work. But, you know, now it's just a matter of continuing the role. And, you know, a Seattle team that's really struggled to score runs, and then an Oakland team after that. So I think all the issues that this team might have on the pitching side were there when they were playing really well a couple weeks ago. They were there last week during the five-game losing streak. And we saw Sunday night Cole Irvin struggle once again, and kind of feels like he might be the odd man out here as Dean Kramer's ready to return to the rotation, let alone whoever else they might acquire in the coming weeks before the trade deadline. But it's a really good baseball team, and they've really hit the ball, and they've done what they needed to do to get themselves straightened out after a rough week that they had. So, you know, I think they're, you feel as good about them as you have in the big picture for a while now, just acknowledging, yeah, Mike Elias needs to add some pitching help, but we've known that. We've talked about that for weeks, if not months now, but good to see them get back on track. And again, it's what I expected them to do. It's what they've done for the better part of 2 years now. It's why they've been one of the class teams in the American League.
So I had a kind of a wild weekend. After my wife broke her ankle a month ago, we haven't done a whole lot, and she's feeling a little bit better, hobbling around a little bit. And there were some good concerts. So went to Hershey, see Hootie and the Blowfish on Friday night. Then on Saturday, after spending the day working at home all day, went down to Annapolis and spent the evening in Annapolis with Greg Hawks and his Cars band, which was just unbelievable. So shout out to Laura Price and everybody at Ramshead for taking good care of me there. And then on Sunday, I went to the Heritage Fair in Dundalk, lifted a ice cold Modelo in the beer garden and watched Get the Lead Out. And everywhere I went, and I'm wearing my Baltimore versus everybody shirt. I'm debuting this. I bought this for a dude for $10 at the corner of Rad and Howard leaving an Oriole game. It was the game we went to thinking they could clinch, and they didn't clinch last September. On the way out, guy had one of these shirts. I'm like, give me that, $10. So I bought this. The one thing I'll say is everywhere I went, there were Oriole hats, more some shirts too. I saw some Gunnar Henderson in the beer garden on Sunday night. But everywhere I went, you know, despite what the Whistler and Mr. Rubenstein, anybody thinks about my baseballdom, people know who I am and they come up and talk baseball with me wherever I am. It was all about the pitching, dude. It's like, I don't take phone calls for a living anymore, but when you do it for 25 years, people still want to give you a phone call, whether it's down on the field in Hershey, whether it's in the street at this beautiful festival in Annapolis, or whether certainly in the beer garden. It was all Orioles in the beer garden when it wasn't Led Zeppelin. You know, their pitching is what the fans are talking about more than Mr. Rubenstein dancing, you know, all these orchestrated things this owner's doing, which I will, that'll be a whole big bag of leaves that we'll get to before the summer's over with. But I'm taking my chances and where we are with all of that. But I would just say for the team itself and for where July 1, as you and I get together on the eve of the All-Star break, they're going to go out and play nighttime baseball. They're going to play lonely baseball out in Oakland this weekend. We're going to watch. They're in first place. I mean, no matter what we would say, five-game losing streak, this or that, they're in first place. It's July, the All-Star game. You and I are going to pick it back up. I mean, you're not even going to Wildwood this week, which, you know, I mean, hang in there. Let's get through the All-Star break. But this Yankee series next weekend here, enormous, right? I mean, like, they get bigger, even bigger than it was a couple of weeks ago up there. And the pitching and every third or fourth or fifth day, and we'll see Kramer. But, the, you know, Bradish isn't coming over the hill. Wells isn't coming over the hill. See where we are with Povich or whatever. But the pitching is on the tip of everyone's tongue. And whether it's Mr. Moneybags, Mr. John Denver, you know, whether he's going to fork out $20 to $50 to $100 million to bring in somebody else's pitcher with a deal on it or years left on it. I mean, people are saying to me, who are they going to deal for? I think this is a – the bigger issue, the way I answer it when I'm in the streets of Annapolis or on the field at Hootie and the Blowfish, the way I answer it is there's a lot of teams out there bidding, and the perception is the Orioles have the most to deal from. The perception is the Orioles want it the most. Corbin Burns, new owner, Mr. Moneybags, cows behind the plate, starving community here for baseball, transitional thing that if this team could just get to the World Series and get swept in three games, it would be monumental for Mr. Rubenstein and his legacy of philanthropy and profit, that this year is really important. Not that you're going to fleece Elias, but the expectations here that I feel on the street when I walk around and I'm not at the ballpark, about what they better do to wake up on August 2nd with something better than what they have. I don't want to be disrespectful to Cole Irvin. He loves animals. You know what I mean? He's a nice guy. But you got to, you know, you got to do better than 8-1 on my app Sunday night when I'm watching Get the Lead Out in the beer garden, Lucas.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are lots of teams in baseball, lots of good teams in baseball looking for pitching too. And that's what's challenging about this, because it is probably going to be a seller's market in terms of if you're one of those very few teams like the White Sox, who we've been talking about since what, the third week of April, as being definitive sellers because of how lousy that they are and how lousy of a start they got.
I want to tell a funny story, you know, because I am always interruptive, as the YouTube crowd says. Orlando Brown, the great late Orlando Brown, not little Zeus, Zeus's dad. I'll never forget. This is after he had chased Preston on the back fields out there one day, pissed off. I remember his locker was right on the left on the way inside. And this is before he went to Cleveland and had the eye thing. This is before any of that. This is when he was here and he got paid to be here. It's before he even got like a big contract. He said to a bunch of reporters, and this is 6'9", Zeus, saying, you know, an older Zeus when there was a young John Ogden, saying, "Yo, y'all put my salary in the paper. You know what happens when you put my salary in the paper? Kids come cut my lawn. Next door, $50. Next door, $75. They want $200 from me because of how much money I make." And I think the Orioles situation is there's such expectation here, and there's such a thought of send him Norby, send him Kerstad, send him this, send him that, send him Mayo, throw Povich in. Do whatever we got to do. And I'm part of that in that they're not going to have Corbin Burnes next year unless, you know, Steve Martin's doppelganger reaches in for whatever money you probably wouldn't give him. And maybe Mike Elias wouldn't love that either, but he'll start to do things differently under new ownership in regard to, I have more money. Let's, this guy wants to win. He's dancing on dugouts. Let's go. He's a billionaire. He wants to win. I don't know if we have that or not. If we have that, we'll find out. It's not going to take an interview with me to figure that out. But I would just say the perception is not that you can fleece Elias, but that you can get more from here than you can get from anywhere. And I think that's the perception of the fans of this level of expectation that is building in my mind as the crowds grow, as I go out on the street and everywhere I go, people are talking about the baseball team, not the football team, not Lamar, the baseball team the next 60 days. There's a real high expectation here, and I think throughout baseball that the Orioles have more to give. You can get more out of them. You can get an extra $100 out of them. And that's a really weird – we've never had that, Luke. I've been doing this 33 years. There's never been a July – where we're expected to buy big in first place with a clear deficiency, a clear need because of injury and because of depletion, that this is big stakes, I think, for the future of the franchise, as you'll point out, because you may take the other side and say, dude, don't be giving away the young guys.
Well, you shouldn't give them away. You don't want to pay a Ferrari price for a minivan. I mean, let's call a spade when it comes to that. And, you know, pitching, I mean, we've talked about it, just how fragile it is. I mean, look at the Orioles, the current state of their starting rotation and what we thought it might have been or what it was on opening day or what it was on May 5th. So you always need to stay disciplined with what you're willing to give up. And yes, ownership is a major part of this in the sense of what payroll is going to look like, what the payroll projections look like, how high it can go, because it's not just, oh, spend money. It's also when David Rubenstein is talking about this with Mike Elias, and not to say that he's sitting there and having extensive conversations, but just laying out the realities of it, right? You know, from a business standpoint, if you're Mike Elias, it makes it easier to deal maybe a little bit more than you're willing to deal if you know that you're going to be able to spend more money in free agency, or you can take on a veteran pitcher's contract that might have another year owed on it where there's a real salary commitment there. So, you know, that's part of it. But at the same time, Mike Elias and Sig Meidel did not get where they got in terms of what they've done here, in terms of being in Houston or St. Louis before that, working under other good baseball people, with just artificially raising your value of how you're going to suddenly acquire players, right? Again, you don't want to pay a Ferrari price for a minivan. And Mike Elias is going to stay disciplined. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to sit here and say I don't think they're going to make moves. I think they are. At the same time, and we talked about this a few weeks back when they played Arizona, Texas is a perfect example here. The Rangers were not the best team in baseball last year. We've seen what's happened to them this year in terms of falling off, and it's not as though they gutted their roster in the offseason. So they won a World Series last year, right? So it's also a reminder of the goal here isn't to be a 105 win outfit. Now, you want to win the division. Let's be clear. And it might take 105 wins to do that. And the Yankees are thinking the same thing right now. But the end goal, the end game is to get to the World Series. And the Dodgers, who've spent insane money, who've had insane success in the regular season for what, 7, 8, 9 years now, what do they have to show for it in terms of World Series championships? So point I'm making here is, yes, they need pitching. We all know that at this point. And again, we knew that before the 5-game losing streak. We knew that before they took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies and 2 out of 3 from the Yankees the week before that. And everyone was going crazy because, hey, they beat the best team in the NL and they beat the best team in the AL at that point in time. But we also know that so much of October hinges on not just being the best team on paper or having the best pitching staff on paper or the best lineup on paper. So much of it is going to hinge on how are you playing at that point in time. And Arizona and Texas got hot late in the regular season, and then they carry that on into a World Series run for, you know, for both those teams. Because they, again, they weren't, you know, Orioles won more games than both those teams last year. So it's tough because, yeah, you want to improve your team. There's no question about that. And I fully expect Mike Elias to do that. But at the same time, even if they add a starting pitcher, even if they add a reliever, there's still no guarantee here. So, you know, the point is you've got to balance what you want to do this year. And I fully, wholeheartedly agree with you. You want to take advantage of this because Corbin Burnes, I'm still skeptical, even if the Orioles are willing to do it, even if Mike Elias thinks it's a good long-term investment, despite what we know about how fragile and how injury-prone pitching is, and just knowing, looking at all the big contracts around baseball right now and knowing how many of those pitchers have been hurt, but at the same time, still doing it and still being in a position where, you know, that's going to make the most sense to do that, you want to take advantage. You know you're not going to have Corbin Burnes. You know you're not going to have Kyle Bradish until, best case scenario, maybe August of next year. You know, so you can't really expect anything from Kyle Bradish next year either. So, but that's also part of why I've said go out and get a starting pitcher that is controllable beyond this season. You know, that it's not just a rental. But we also know that means it's going to cost more, you know, in terms of what you give up in a trade. So, you know, we know that the system has been built in a way that they loaded up on so much position player talent, so much hitting talent, that the whole point was you would have a surplus, you know, perception wise, to then go out and make moves. And we've seen them already do that, you know, when they traded Joey Ortiz for Corbin Burnes, but they're going to do that again, you know, whether it's this trade deadline, whether it's this coming winter, you know, to acquire maybe your next Corbin Burnes, so to speak, whatever it might be. But, you know, that's part of it. But at the same time, again, you don't want to overpay for something that's not going to necessarily move the needle to the degree that you hope. So that's where you do need to have a lot of discipline. I think the point that you made, and we talked about this a little bit last year with the White Sox, you know, with the whole Dylan Cease thing and all that, where the White Sox, you know, by multiple indications, sounded like they were asking for the absolute moon from the Orioles. And the Orioles said, look, we want to get better. And we like Dylan Cease, but we're not paying you a haul that would be, you know, that we think Dylan Cease is Pedro Martinez in 1999, right? So, you know, you still want to
and
be.
And Burnes has been better this year than Cease would have been this
year.
I don't measure these guys in 3 to 5 year sums, especially with the arms, because you can't. You could only measure them in, how good are they right now? I mean, we don't measure, you know, Cano based on May of 2023. It's more a body of work. And I think the body of work is the same thing with Cole Irvin. And I think the body of work is the same thing with Dean Kramer. You know, as to what you're expecting to get out of him in August and September, that's any different than what you got out of him in April or last year, expecting anybody to be a white horse. And I know we went we did a half an hour on Grayson Rodriguez last week. And Burnes is just, we just pencil him in as a horse. He's our Jack Morris. He's our Roger Clemens. All of a sudden, and there are days it feels like he's all you got once you get past Rodriguez. And at this point, when you're in first place, everybody would say, well, relax, they're fine, they're in first place. I don't think it's the job of us in the media or Mike Elias to relax or say what they have is good enough when It's pretty obvious it's not. It's not going to be in October as comprised.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not even willing to say that entire that, you know, that it's obvious that they're not, because you do have Corbin Burnes, you do have Grayson Rodriguez. You know, you're not using a five-man rotation in the postseason. You know, you're not using, you know, you don't need studs as your number four and number five starters. Do they need a guy that is going to emerge as the legit number three, you know, or, you know, if you want to say number two and Grayson Rodriguez number three, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But that said, you don't need that guy to be as good as Corbin Burnes. You need that guy to be someone that's going to give you five good innings in a postseason start, because you're going to turn it over to your bullpen.
But okay.
That's where we talk about the bullpen. Yeah,
right.
Of course.
Yeah, that's true. So I mean, who are the three guys in the bullpen that are your October guys, or even your September guys? You know what I mean? Like, who are the three that we love in our bullpen? And,
well, that's why they need two, because I don't love three in that capacity.
But go ahead.
Look, I mean, we don't need to sit here and debate that they need pitching anymore. Everyone knows that. I mean, people keep telling me that on Twitter. It's like, guys, I know that. Like, Mike Elias knows that. But at the same time, they are really good, and they do have an offense that, let's face it, and let's call a spade here. And Seattle is a great team to talk about here, just to use as a case study. Mariners are leading their division. Now, their lead's not as big as it had been, but both of those teams, the Orioles and the Mariners, going into this series, have the same number of runs allowed. Now, the Orioles, I think, have played two fewer games. Point is, they both have been very good from a run prevention standpoint in the aggregate. Now, would I take Seattle's pitching overall compared to the Orioles? Yeah. But on the flip side, the Orioles have a much, much, much better offense. I mean, they've scored 100 more runs than the Mariners have. So part of this is also going to be, yeah, the Orioles need more pitching. There's no doubt about that. No one's debating that. The biggest orange Kool-Aid drinker on the planet right now would acknowledge, yeah, they could certainly benefit from some more pitching. I mean, we've all watched how it's played out. At the same time, if the Orioles are going to make a deep October run, their offense is going to have to be doing a huge part of that, Nestor. And we've seen that. I mean, when the Astros won, cheating part of it aside, and I understand that that was part of it, but they did win multiple pennants.
Dude, if they lose in October 3-1 because they get four hits off of Gerrit Cole in seven innings, and they're swinging it, bad pitches, they're not getting on base, nobody's drawing walks, everybody's striking out, they're playing in the twilight, like any of that, I'm going to live with that in the offseason and say, like I did when Eddie Murray didn't hit 19 in 79. I'm just going to say, you know what? Didn't hit the ball. And I would almost feel a little bit like that last year, as you went into the clubhouse and I was restricted. And, you know, on that night when it all went down and we got on the plane and flew home from Arlington. By the way, I was telling a guy about our tour of the Star, a Cowboys fan in the beer garden the other day. You know, as we're coming back from that, I felt like they didn't do much. They were young. You know what I mean? That's how it felt last year to me. It felt like I'm not down on Rutschman or down on Henderson or down on Santa, any of the guys who didn't get 10 runs, you know, and hit three home runs in any of those games. I chalked that up to experience last year, and that's why I didn't get my feelings hurt. Now you go out and you get Corbin Burnes. Peter's dead. You get a new owner. He's running around dancing with the bird, wants to win, squirting fans, and they're selling tickets and people are coming. And this expectation that they have this incredible farm system, they could deal anything they want to get. They could win any trade they wanted to win because they have more money, because they are that, right? That there is an expectation that they're going to try harder than maybe they would. And I'll tell you this, if at the end of it, they don't get enough pitching and they lose because of that, that would be a shame. If they lose because Gerrit Cole shoves and, you know, whomever they play, the Mariners, whoever it is, the pitching shuts down the offense and the offense doesn't hit the ball and they lose 3-1 games, I'm going to live with that in the off season, because I think the offensive part of this, I'm willing to go to sleep every night thinking that's good enough. It can be good enough. I hope it's good enough. It turns on and off, but I hope it turns on and Mountcastle, you know, hits four home runs in the post, you know, like all of the things that we know they're capable of. I see the possibility of the offense. I see the detriment of the pitching right now.
It's fair. We can keep talking, having the same conversation every day, and I'm not going to disagree with you on it. But again, you can only go out there and get what's going to be available, and how much pitching is going to be out there. And again, I will continue to say, if there's only a minivan out there, you better not pay for a Ferrari price for it. I mean, I'm just gonna say that. And
well, the history of the game is back in the 90s when all these deals would happen and the Orioles would be a part of the Wells and the this and the that, and they'd miss out on the Chris Witcher. Yeah. And there was a lot of Wild Wild West going on during that period of time.
Sure.
And a lot of guys got rented for 8 weeks and none of it met. And because August 1st, there were 10 teams trying hard back in those days, making not blockbusters, but BJ Suroff's going there. Real players, all-star caliber players moving around in a lot of seats, everybody trying to get right. And in the end, a lot of guys wore hats for 8 weeks. Mike Piazza, Charles Jobby, just all these guys wore hats you don't even remember them wearing. And it didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of that. So, you know, impact players. We talked about Andrew Miller. He made impact. We didn't win.
you know? Well, and that's where I still look at this. And look, because of the Bradish injury specifically, so much of the attention has gone back on the rotation, right? And understandably so. Huh? And you still have 3 months to navigate here, right? And so much of I was even thinking about this on my drive home from the ballpark late Sunday night. I mean, the game was very forgettable, right? I mean, the last game of the series that they took 3 out of 4. So it wasn't something to be distraught about, but certainly was a disappointing night. But I just thought about this. And over the last month and a half where they've had this stretch where there've only been 2 off days. And at the beginning of this stretch, they still had John Means. They still had Kyle Bradish. They still had Danny Coulomb in the bullpen, who's obviously been one of their best relievers over the last 2 years. And I just started thinking about it. I'm just like, you know, so much of baseball season is just about surviving it. It really is. I mean, we talk about attrition a lot in the NFL because of the injury factor and just football being the sport that it is with the high injury rate. But in baseball, it's similar in the sense of, you know, it's a grind. It is an absolute grind. It's a grind physically. And I think really mentally, it can be that kind of a grind when you don't have many off days like they did. And the fact that they pitched or not pitched, the fact that they played so well. And I mean, obviously June, all the home runs they hit, the offense doing what it did, but still getting good pitching performances, you know, and certainly having some guys step up. You know, I mean, Albert Suarez pitched well this last time out after a couple starts where it didn't look so good. You know, Kay Povich got his first win over the weekend. That was nice to see. You know, not sold on him as an answer, certainly in October, but he's given them some decent outings at a time where they really needed it.
Is he an answer the next 4 weeks every fifth day?
I mean, if he's an answer every fifth day, I mean, I think that's possible. Do I feel so good about him that I'm ready to start him in Game 3 of a postseason series? No, and nor would you really feel that way. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, this isn't Paul Skeens being called up as a phenom prospect for the Pirates. I mean, you know, Kay Povich was, you know, a fringe, maybe top 100 prospect around baseball, depending on what, you know, what publication you subscribe to. But,
well, let's be honest. He's only here for one reason. Everybody else got hurt. He wouldn't be here.
Right, sure. I mean, if in your first case, I mean, that was why
he's their eighth choice, literally, out of spring training,
and
right?
That's kind of where Tyler Wells was. You know, I mean, he was their number 3 or number 4 starter to open the season, but it's because Bradish and Means were on the IL, right? I mean, Tyler Wells ideally would have been in the back end of your bullpen. So
Suarez and Irvin are way in line in front of him, and we're months in line in front of him. Yeah,
sure. I mean, you need pitching depth. I mean, there's no question about it. But pitching depth for the next 3 months is not the same thing as what the pitching staff looks like in an October series, right? I mean, we know that. I mean, you're not going to have a 5-game rotation for, or a 5-man rotation for a 5-game series. You know, you're going to have 4. And, you know, that fourth guy, depending on off days or if there's a rain out or anything like that, may never even, you know, may not start depending on how it all plays out. But, you know, the overall point that I was trying to make is it's such a long season to survive it. You need arms in the back end of your rotation that aren't necessarily going to factor heavily into outcomes in October, but they're going to factor in getting you there. That's where Cade Povich is important in the sense of, can he be a number four or number five starter that gives you a chance to win, even if he's not going to start in the postseason, even if he's going to work out of the bullpen. But as I think about this more and more, and as I said, you know, so much of the attention has moved to the rotation. And yeah, I'd like to see them get a really rock solid number three starter as much as anyone. But it's where I keep coming back to the bullpen. And for me, I still prioritize adding a couple arms to that bullpen. I still think that's still more important than adding another starting pitcher, if we're talking strictly through the lens of October, because.
And also on a cost level, it generally relievers cost less. Generally.
Yeah, generally. But they're also less predictable, right? I mean, it's a lot more like that. That's a really unreliable stock in the sense of, yeah, you'll have someone like Yennier Cano, for example, who looked incredible the first 3 months last year, didn't look as good, but still looked better than he's looked this year. I mean, Yennier Cano right now, and I know he was better on Saturday, but Friday night when you know he puts guys on and really puts the bullpen and the Orioles in a major bind, and you know they were able to navigate it, and Craig Kimbrel got his first save of the year where he came in with a one run lead and all that, but you know. You tell me, where's your confidence level in Cano relative to the rest of this bullpen right now? He's pretty low on that list for me. I'm not very confident in him right now. And he's supposed to be one of your best relievers. So, you know, the point I'm making is, yeah, I'd like to see them add another starter. I mean, that's a captain obvious statement. But I still think in terms of biggest impact in October, boy, you better go get two arms. And one needs to be a serious high leverage arm that I want to at least be able to put side by side with Craig Kimbrel, let's say, you know, and depending on the matchup, depending on workload, all those different things, that someone that either has been a closer or is that good that can do that on the right night. And you better add another arm, but because I mean, you just look at this right now, Kimbrel, despite fan angst and media angst, since that 2.5 week stretch that he had in late April and May, he's been good, and he's been really good at times, you know, in fairness to him, you know, and I get it. And I've been the one saying it since
the
time they
fired
him.
Well, you're
going to
need a good
him.
Version of him in October. Of course. You're paying him more than you're paying the whole rotation. You know what I mean? So
other than Burns, right?
Burns, yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, so I would think that he has to be in October for the Orioles to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to put it like it's Lamar with the Ravens, but he has to be upright. I mean, he has to be upright and ready to come in and get three outs in October, or we got real problems if Cano's that guy, you know, once you get there.
Well, and this kind of goes back to the point I was trying to make with Texas and Arizona and where they are now. Nestor, we know, and we've seen it now over and over and over, and it's only getting worse now in terms of expanding the playoffs and having a bigger field and knowing that baseball is such a day-to-day high-variance sport where every team, even the lousiest team, wins 50 games a year, even the worst or the best team loses 50 games a year. We know that whole story. We know over and over that we're seeing more frequently the best team does not win in October. And so much of it is just, frankly, some luck. And a big part of it is who is playing really well at that point in time.
Show up and hit the ball.
Yeah. So as it sounds so flippant to say this because, yeah, in a perfect world, Mike Elias adds a number two starter and adds this year's version of Andrew Miller and this
and
year's
in the
version
end,
of Randy
it'll all
Myers.
Be about Gunnar Henderson being pissed off for greatness and hitting three home runs in game three or something, yeah. Right? Like that's what it'll be. Like, that's my point. The batting, they're going to win the World Series because they hit the ball, but they better figure out the pitching. The pitching better at least be good enough that if they score 5 or 6, they don't lose 9-6.
Yeah, that's fair. Agreed. At the same time, can Grayson Rodriguez, and I don't want to put this name on him in terms of career expectations, because this guy did not have the kind of career that people thought at the time, but does Grayson Rodriguez have a Jarrett Wright run in him? You know, I mean, we did that for Cleveland all those years ago where he was this suddenly He's a stud. Now, that didn't last, and that was very fleeting for him. But again, it's kind of, you know, who gets hot at the right time? Who gets in a role at the right possible time? And that's where you made the point. All these trade deadline deals that you can remember from 25 and 30 years ago.
Ricky Henderson was in one every year, you know? So was Winfield.
A few of them pay major dividends, yes. But so many of them end up being, not great.
I have a long history of taking phone calls for 32 years where it was Lonnie Smith and Craig Lefferts and just deals that you look at. I mean, whether it was Pete Incaviglia and Todd Zeal, I remember all of these things. And the game's not that way anymore in regard to that much dealing being done because – everybody's coming to fleece Mike Elias of five guys that are in Norfolk that would three of those guys will be here next year and they'll be playing like Ortiz and they'll be doing it at league minimum and under control. And that's where Mr. Moneybags and the new ownership and where are we going to be in 26 and 27 and what's our attendance going to be and what's our media model and what's our revenue model and where are our sponsorships and that's the big picture of the baseball business side that is responsible business. This guy's a billionaire, and I'll get to him. I watched his Squawk Box thing last week, Rubenstein, but I'm not going to be godding him up like everybody else around here because I watch the political stuff that happens on the weekends, and I sort of scratch my head at a guy that one minute talks about making money and being a philanthropist and one minute talking about how he's best friends with Joe Biden and just interviewed Trump, but he's not a political guy. It was like an unbelievable conversation I heard on Squawk Box last week, but whatever he is what this is going to be. And I don't know what he is because this thing's under new control. And that is the ultimate, that's not a wild card. That's a joker in the deck. I mean, to me, I have no idea. That's an ace. I don't know what his role in the next 30 days is going to be other than dancing on the dugout. And, you know, like they're his assets now. All of these young players, he's a billionaire. He sort of understands how the game works. And he's also like, by every account, a pretty miserly dude that's made a lot of money by making a lot of money. He ain't going to be giving money away or giving away assets or giving away cheap real estate, or he's going to see it all in that way because my sources tell me he doesn't know a whole lot about baseball. Like he doesn't know who's in the Mariners rotation this week. Like he's not a baseball fan like that. And that's one of the reasons they'll never have him sit with me because I'll start talking about stuff and he'll be lost because he just bought the team and wants to run around with a hat on. He's not the guy in with Elias the way Angelos's kids were 30 years ago. My vibe is Elias is going to get to do what Elias wants to do. But my vibe is also like this guy's counting beans and assets and money. And that's the most important thing you can do is make sure you're not giving away guys, especially when you got to pay Henderson and Rutschman and these guys are expected to where all the money's coming from. And part of that's playing with cheap help that you're going to be giving away in this pennant race because these guys' arms fell off. You said a date back in May, whatever the date that the press conference was, we have six starters and Means and that 10-day period where it was all right around Preakness. Like, that's where, if I'm writing Orange Dynasty 1 and they win the World Series, man, that's where the rubber meets the road is they had six starters and now it's July 1st and they have to figure this out.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll leave you with one final question as it, you know, to kind of piggyback what you were talking about with David Rubenstein and where they're going from a payroll standpoint, business standpoint, all those different things. If you're Mike Elias, are you going to be the St. Louis Cardinals, which I've used them as, to me, a realistic long-term model to aspire to, a team that's been built. And I don't mean in 2024, but the last 25 years specifically.
They've always paid farm two or system. Three guys and they've had paid a farm guys. System, and they've brought in Kyle Gibson. And, there you go.
They right, and they've had a payroll that's, you know, kind of been somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe as high as seventh in baseball on the stray year. But somewhere in that, you know,
and they didn't pay Pujols. Yeah,
right. But like, you know, they've been maybe as high as sixth or seventh in payroll, but they've probably, you know, been somewhere more in the neighborhood of 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. So top third, let's say, of baseball. And they've been a team that's really taken a lot of pride in having a farm system. Are you going to be that? Are you going to aspire to be that, which is a nice mix, a healthy mix of player development and augmenting and re-signing and going out and getting a free agent here and there? Or are you going to be more like the Tampa Bay Rays, which is heck of a farm system? They've had a lot of success for 15 years doing that, but it's been a lot of roster churn, a lot of roster churn and turnover, where one of the big complaints, and obviously that's a different market, terrible location for the ballpark, all the different things about St. Petersburg and Tampa, but you really have had struggles for fans to identify with certain players because they're not really there longer than a few years here and there. Other than, I guess, maybe Evan Longoria was kind of the exception for a long time. But, you know, what are you going to be? And that's where it's still TBD in terms of David Rubenstein and what him and his partners, what they envision this Orioles franchise being. Not right now when things are so great, but in the next 5 to 10 years, what is it going to look like in terms of payroll and all of those different business decisions?
Luke Jones was actually passengering in our rental car as we passed Tropicana Field in St. Pete. And literally, you looked at it and laughed out loud and said, look at that dump, is what you said. So, you know, we certainly do better than that from your press box angle at Camden Yards. Don't enjoy the press box too much, dude. I hear some changes may be afloat as far as this $600 million is being paid to send you out to left field. And enjoy the games in the corner of the end zone in the new ballpark down at the football season, too. Luke Jones, who is a credentialed media member here on behalf of WNST and Baltimore Positive. He will not be, he'll be uncredentialed and will be just like the rest of us watching Kevin Brown on television from Seattle this week and Oaklandia. Almost went to Oakland this weekend just for old time's sake, but instead I'm going to be here nursing my 4th of July American patriotism and fun. And we have all sorts of festivals. I was over in Catonsville, had dinner at the Beaumont, the beautiful dinner over there. They already have the chairs out in Catonsville. It is 4th of July week. Luke Jones is around. We're going to be bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road next Friday. I called it like a week off. It's like 90. It feels like blink and we're there. I was at Pappas a minute ago last week as well. We had a heck of a June. All the stuff up at BaltimorePositive.com. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery giving us the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We'll have these to give away at Fadley's next Friday as the second place. First place, New York Yankees come to Baltimore. That'll be on the 12th. We'll be doing that. Luke and I are going to talk some baseball. We got a lot of great stuff on the air this week, a lot of great conversations. It is the 4th of July, and we're having fun around here. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and just like my shirt says, Baltimore versus everybody at Baltimore Positive.